MK on the ground in South Florida. I don't know if people notice, we're getting a little bit of dad shape lately, but I want to take it to the next level. I want to get strong. Daru, strong.
Hopping the feet. I'm with the dogs, we popping a leash. Ragging a ball and a talking is cheap. Can't entertain what I got from the streets.
More extension. More extension, yeah. Well, it's instability too.
Yeah.
All right, what's going on, guys? My name is Phil DeRue. We are here about to shoot Room Service Diaries, and I'm going to go ahead and send Brian and Luke through a DeRue Strong training session. I know Brian is a funny guy, so we're going to go ahead and see how funny he's going to be when he pushes his prowler. Maybe he will throw up, maybe he won't. We'll see what happens. Now, Luke, on the other hand, I know he can push some weight, so I'm going to go ahead and see how well he does in my territory.
How are you?
Are you guys into ass tats too?
He also said, listen, no, but.
Yeah, see, I knew I liked this guy.
I'm gonna show you.
Sorry. Oh, no. I never had somebody show me their dad's ass before this excitedly. Look, holy shit.
Holy shit. That's like the one on the back of your head.
Precisely, like mandala style.
Okay, yeah.
You know, we don't always talk to trainers on this show, but when they're as esteemed and good and as well, let's say accomplished as our next guest. How about badass too? We decide to do it all the way from Deerfield Beach, Florida. It is the trainer to the stars. It's Phil DeRue. Hi, Phil.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, first of all, I have to do this on camera. I have to apologize to Phil. We were supposed to shoot this 2 hours ago. I went to the wrong airport. I am so sorry, Phil. I did this to everyone. It's my fault, bro.
Well, this is
what
happens when you go to Florida, man. Things start to get crazy.
I don't think I'm the only person to do this, though. I feel like it's happened before to other people.
It's definitely happened. And what I'm seeing is an influx of people just migrating over to Florida. So then you have the traffic on top of that. So you're all good. You're my man, so I'm no problem.
In honor of Phil, I tried to dress like random Florida man today for this. I think I pulled it off well.
Phil, you know? So I think a lot of people don't necessarily know. Some people know who you are. Some people don't. Let's set the table for folks who don't. You are a trainer to a lot of MMA stars. Dustin Poirier. You've had a lot of guys in your stable before. Arlovski. Many other ones.
You want a champion?
You want a champion. What would you say that describe yourself to the folks? How do you view yourself and what you do?
A performance coach, primarily. I'm a teacher. I work with several now at this point, 5,000 coaches that I mentor around the world. So that's really where I go now, is more so coaching coaches. But I still have my staple of fighters that I work with. I've been doing that for 14 years now. I've been training and competing in martial arts for roughly 8 or 9 years. I was a pro at one point with Dean Thomas. So he started me out old school. Yeah, yeah. I was 19, 20 years old after I got out of college playing football. And
he played at a historically black college.
Yeah, we were wondering. BC wants to know, are you black?
Mike Perry was his roommate.
It's funny you said that. But Mike actually was a part of Dean's actually affiliate school. So we used to cross train a lot. So I know Mike for a long time. Yeah, he's a good dude.
You played at Alabama State. You were a defensive back, right?
Defensive back. I played strong safety, and then when I was in high school, played middle linebacker.
Okay, so you were the hitter.
Yeah, that was primarily why I stopped fighting, because of the fact that the concussions just built up on me.
All right, so let's rewind the tape. Where'd you grow up?
Here, Deerfield Beach, Florida, Broward County primarily, up and down Fort Lauderdale area. But I decided to put the gym here because I wanted to give back to the community. This is something that I've always wanted to do at some point, and the brand built enough to where now I can fully do that. And I have my other gym. I live about an hour and a half away, so I have that gym up there. But I wanted to make this spot special for the kids in the community. Give them somewhere that they can go that is positive. Because let's face it, we don't live in the greatest area, right? So what I want to do is give back, give them an opportunity to be around positive individuals. Not only do we have fighters in here, professional athletes, but we have celebrities too as well. We have great human beings just in general. So I wanted to give them a spot to where they could come to have that.
All right, so let's get back to Dean if we can.
Sure.
How did you win him over? Did you win him over? Like the journey through MMA, because it wasn't a long journey in MMA. You've been in the MMA sport in various roles, but as a fighter, it wasn't a super long one.
No, 8 years primarily. Okay. Like it seemed longer because I was in it. I was in it for two, three days, or through two, three times a day for 6, 7 days a week. And so with Dean, I think it was more so he wanted to make sure that I was really, truly into it, you know, because he started when it wasn't like the cool thing to do, right? He was, you know, finding wrestlers in high school. He was cutting their hair and, you know, bartering with them to teach them how to wrestle. Hmm. You know, these are those times. But now it's like everybody wanted to fight at that point. You know, the Ultimate Fighter came out. So he was really with all of us. We had five guys, five professionals, amateur to professional, that he brought up with him. And so we were always looking to, you know, showcase ourselves and make sure that we won him over, per se. He was one of those hard asses that, like, you know, it was going to be a hard way to get him to, like, really follow what we were doing, you know. And I remember my first amateur fight I won, and I called him. He wasn't even there. This was in Cut Off, Louisiana. It was, like, population 1,000, maybe. Right, I don't know. Right. And I won the fight, and I called him, and I'm, like, super excited. And I go, Dean, man, I won. I did great. He's like, cool, when you coming back to the gym? He didn't even say, like, good. I don't think he said cool. I said, when you coming back to the gym? I think that's the only thing he said. And I go, Monday, I guess, man. Like, hung up, and that was it. And that's Dean, you know? I think now he's stated this recently, that he's seen my progression. He's seen the growth from when I was a young kid coming to him, you know, rough around the edges to now. So, and I remember the day that I talked to him after I actually retired based on what he told me, because I would have kept trying to go for it.
Did he give you like a Rogan DeShab type speech to talk you off?
I think so. It was primarily like, listen, if this was your knee or your elbow or your arm or something, like, you could work around it, but it's your brain. You can't really work around that. So, you know, after he told me that, that's when I decided to just call it quits in a sense and pivot, you know. But 2 years later, a year and a half later, I wanted to get back into the sport heavily. And so he was down at ATT, and I know he was coaching full time now. He had left the gym that I started with, and there was really no other MMA gym per se like that. So when he went down, I was like, all right, well, I want to get back into sport, but I just don't know. I want to, you know, try to get there. What can I do? Or if you have any openings for somebody that you're working with, because I knew he's still working with Tyron. I knew that he was down there. So, like, maybe there's something there. And he's like, you know what, you may be in luck. Come down, bring your resume, you know, see what you can do. And so the first day I trained King Mola Wall, Teacher Torres, Dustin, and Dia Davis. And that was the first day. So I was like, okay, throw me to the wolves, I guess. But at that time, I had already developed a great coaching skill at that point. I've already built my gym up. We were at that 11,000 square feet. You know, I had like 300 members. And I was like, you know what, let's see what I can do. Because I wanted to still work with fighters. I still wanted to work with those competitors. And I wanted to be a part of it now. I still wanted to be there at some capacity.
I got questions, though. What type of fighter was Phil DeRue?
I was an athlete, you know, primarily. I mean, at the
end of
the day. Because
you had high school wrestling experience.
Yeah, I wrestled. I think more so I was more enticed with the stand-up game, primarily. I wanted to stand up and fight and all that. But I would just take it to where I knew that my opponent didn't have. And that was the main thing, was like I was looking to game plan. And so that's when I found out that I would be a better coach than an actual fighter.
Sure.
Because the game plan, the strategy, the tactics, you know, really resonated with me.
Did you have a shitty nickname? Please tell me.
It was Bam Bam.
Oh, Bam Bam.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good,
it's
actually.
All right. I mean, that's very specific, though. You got to look the part.
And that primarily was from me as a younger kid, because I was just hitting everything when I was a kid. So I was like, oh, that was the nickname y'all gave me? Okay, I'll just take that then, you know. Yeah. But it went through several different phases, you know.
When did it dawn on you where you were like, I'm actually a pretty good coach. Like, I could do something with this, you know?
I knew I was a good trainer. I knew I was a good motivator when I was a kid, because I started really training people, my friends, at like 16. You know, I would bring guys over to the gym, or I would bring them to my, I had this makeshift bench that was like wobbly, but I would put together programs, and I was reading Louis stuff, and I was reading Joe DeFranco. And so I already knew how to like properly program and periodize at a young age. When I started to realize that I could coach at a high level was when I got to Top Team, because I knew that the methods and the systems and the protocols that I was using was actually working at a high level, and then I could relay and communicate properly to these people that take it to the next level on that way. Then I was like, okay, I got something here.
On the split between what you actually do, obviously so much of it is scientific and involves the body and nutrition and all that combining together. But how important is the psychological side in the success you've had? Do you think that that has allowed you to kind of start to separate your name from the others in this game?
It's very big in the fight game. It's very big in just sport in general. You know, that was something that I needed to learn more of. I needed to learn how to properly communicate and understand personality traits and go to a point where I can test them and actually assess, you know, who they are as an individual. So then I can go ahead and relay over information that is going to get us the adaptation necessary.
But you gotta get in that ass, so to speak.
Absolutely. Here's the thing. It's funny. Some guys don't like that, right?
So
some
guys, not everyone responds to that hard ass shit.
Some guys don't like that. And I thought that going into that situation, because at this point I was training high school kids and some general pop clients, and I had some college football players that liked that style, right? King Mo the Wall liked that style. Dustin Poirier did not like that style, right? So, like, I remember, I guess he told Dia, he's like, man, why is this guy yelling at us? And I was like, oh, this doesn't work for him, right? You know? At certain times, you know, especially when you develop a trust and a bond with that individual, yeah, you can do that, but you have to find pain points. You have to peel back the layers on their actual why, and then you can relay over certain things and say certain things to get them to be motivated. Because, listen, at the end of the day, elite fighters at the UFC level, they are already self-motivated. It's just getting that one or two things out of them to really figure out, okay, I need to push it a little bit more. Because in a controlled environment with prowlers and squat racks and things like that, they're not used to that in all essence. Like, most of the fighters very new to the weight room. So pushing them in this world is a little bit different. Whereas that they know if they don't push it in sparring or they don't push it in their drills, they may not make it out of the cage alive, right? So it's really different in that perspective. So I have to give them a reframing. I have to make them understand that what we do in here will have some transfer over to what they do over there. And when that happens, then you get buy-in.
When did you go independent?
I went independent. Well, I was always independent.
Okay, okay. But like, you know, fully independent, I guess.
So I started at 22, right? Opened up my own gym, 22 years old. And then when I went to Top Team, that was the first time I ever actually got a paycheck. I've never really gotten a pay job, so I was working on the team, and I was there for 4.5 years, building up, you know, my base, and then understanding, you know, how to actually train these types of people at that level. And then it was around in COVID, I left at 2020.
That's right. And then you've had this facility how long?
I actually moved in here maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh, okay, so this is all relatively
new. This is new, yeah. And I had a gym in Boca Raton with Mo Vaughn for a little bit. And that was really my way out. Like, I got out of Top Team and went over there primarily and just started working and building up, you know, more of a base of like overall clients. So now I have boxers, judokas, everybody.
So Mo Vaughn was the 95 AL MVP. Wanted to remind you of that.
Yeah, thanks. I don't watch baseball, but I do know who Mo Vaughn is.
You were big into like mathlete stuff.
Yeah, I was a mathlete. That's true. All right, so let's talk about Dustin Poirier. How did you end up, like, it seems like of all the relationships you have, and maybe I don't know this, but it just seems from afar anyway, that is one of your closer ones for sure. Is that a fair characterization? And if so, how did it get here?
Well, so I think that similar personalities.
Similar backgrounds in a way too, man.
Similar backgrounds. I fought a lot in Louisiana actually too as well. I fought some of his teammates. I remember, you know, he was in the crowd at one point in my pro debut against Kurt Hollabaugh.
Who fought in Bellator or Strikeforce, I believe?
He fought in Strikeforce and the UFC.
Possibly?
No, he definitely fought in Strikeforce.
He fought in the UFC twice.
That's right.
So, I mean, his big name, or in Louisiana, his big name. We were the main event, too, as well, my pro debut. Yeah, it was crazy. And I made $200, by the way.
Hey, at least you made it. Shit.
I made that and spent that shit on the way back. It was that kind of chemistry, you know. I was there the first time I went there as a coach. I used to train, I used to cross train as a fighter. But the first time I went there as a coach, we sat and we talked for at least an hour and a half. And I remember him just being so welcoming and just the person who he is. You know, he's a stand-up guy. So I like that about
him. And I say that very sparingly about fighters. Randy Couture, American hero, okay?
Sure.
Dustin Poirier, American hero.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, and he likes to say I'm a student of the game, but he's a student of the game too as well. Like, he loves boxing, he loves jiu-jitsu, he loves it all. And I think that was something also that we bonded with. Like, I wanted to be the best at what I did for him, and he wanted to be the best at what he did for his family. So that's where we grew. And then I remember, you know, for the first year, he's a person that keeps a circle close, right? So I had to get into the circle before that happened. And we didn't start working together for another year and a half until he decided, you know, he's not a big strength and conditioning guy. You know, he's not somebody that will just go into the gym. Now he does because he likes to look the part. You know, he wants to build a little bit of muscle. He's getting bigger now too as well. But when I met him, he was still like at that 45, 155 right. range, you know, and he just started to grow, you know, and that's just maturity overall. And that's where like I really started to grow with him because I started to understand him, who he was as a person. Remember the first conversation we had was really about road work and how he loved to run. But you knew before that he had a bad hip issue, right? So he had a hip impingement. He had a
constant problems. Yep.
Very bad. And like at that point, he was not saying anything. So I was like, you'd run 7 miles, but you'd be in excruciating pain afterward. And I said, why are we doing this? I was like, you can do other things to increase your aerobic capacity. And he was like, no, I just like to do it. And I go, well, can we level? Like, can we figure something else out? He's like, no, I'm not going to. You know, it's just him.
It's like working with Brian, really, if I could tell you.
He's like, I'm not going to do it. I mean, and I was like, okay, so do me this favor. When you run on a softer surface. Or when you do run, just manage your volume, you know, per se. And so we leveled with that. He was cool with that.
All right, the success, not necessarily because of you, but you played a big part in the larger Poirier team. You come to Dustin, I believe I was talking to you off camera, right after the loss to Michael Johnson, which kick-started a run for him. He's among the most battle-tested when you're talking about will, chin, durability, but you play a part in building that up. So, you know, what is that strategy and focus? Because you get a guy like that, he has to have the want and will, and he does. But he's built for 25 minutes of hell.
Also, we should say, like, just for the record, for folks who may not remember that fight or haven't seen it, I would argue that's one of Dustin's worst losses mm-hmm. in the sense of relative to his ability, yeah. that was a major underperformance.
Definitely.
You know? And since then, he's kicked it into high gear, obviously.
He definitely should have won that fight. And if that ever got ran back, it would be different.
Oh, I'd pick him to win. I thought he was going to win that fight, to be honest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think he's just grown. I mean, you've seen it from the first Conor fight to the second Conor fight. Like, his mindset is totally different. And he doesn't allow outside distractions to come into his psyche and allow it to negatively affect his performance. You know, so with that, overall, I just wanted him to feel comfortable. And I wanted him to feel comfortable in the fact that he was going to get better no matter what we did in here because it was new to him. So he was going to get an adaptation no matter what.
Right.
I wanted to focus on things that he wasn't doing inside of the skills training.
Why do fighters hate strength and conditioning?
I think most of it is difficult. And then also, for the most part, they don't see the correlation, right? They see it as another stressor, as, you know, more to be tired from, and they have so many things that they have to do. I understand that because, again, I fought, and I know, you know, the day-to-day process. But when you come in and it's directly correlated to whatever their game plan is or whatever their structured dispositions are, right, whether, you know, they have some insufficiency, some coordination issues, whatever the case, if I can get that better and they see that generate more positive adaptation inside the skills training, then they're more apt to actually coming in and doing the work.
But that takes like several camps.
It does.
You gotta build that trust.
It takes time. I mean, that's an investment, like quite literally, like you have to put a dollar in the account, like kind of every day.
I mean, it really didn't, in the case of Dustin, it didn't start until the second camp,
yeah.
where then we started to implement certain things like cognitive conditioning and mobility work. And then he's like, I just wanna blow out my lungs today. And then we started to do, you know, things like that for him because he started to trust the process. And that's the same with every fighter primarily. I had Kevin Lee in here. Kevin Lee's never done any strength and conditioning that was structured. The first day I worked with
him. I saw the video.
Right.
He was walking on his heels and doing like warm-ups from like the littlest part of the muscle all the way to the big one.
Well, he had just future champion Kevin Lee.
You should know this about Kevin Lee and I, or mm-hmm. us. We were and have been big believers in Kevin Lee.
Truthers, if you will.
Truthers. We get accused of being truthers because he has fallen on hard times, although he has returned to the UFC, and so we'll see what happens there. He's got new management, and I know he converted to Islam and stuff, so it seems like his life is in order. But
he may have been a staff infection away from being the interim champion.
He's always been yoked. Like, these dudes, you know what it is? It's the dudes who are naturally athletic, naturally strong, naturally fucking like that. They don't think twice about it, whereas doofuses like us, yeah. every rep matters, you know what I mean?
True, yeah, that's true. And I think that, you know, he took advantage of that in some capacity. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to show him that there was some dysfunction there. He tore his ACL
oh, yeah.
again for the second time.
The same one or a different one?
He tore both of them and then tore this one again
wow.
against Diego in Eagle.
A.
right? And I saw the video and I could see him and he kind of like jolted and he lost his footing.
He couldn't move, yeah.
No, so then he came to me and he didn't even know who I was, which was great. I was happy with it. He knew, like, he knew of me, but he didn't follow me or anything like that. So when he came into the gym, I was just, and he was going to Sanford, so it was right across the street at that time. And I go, listen, we're gonna develop more structure. We gotta get stronger in the surrounding areas. We need to build strength of the muscles that cross that joint. And you know, I tore my ACL. So yes. I know I battled back.
I remember your rehab.
Right.
You documented every stage of that.
I wanted to so I could showcase, okay, this can be dealt with. We can definitely come back from it. And so I did it with him. And then he was like, man, I've never done anything like this. And that's good because now we get a positive adaptation.
Sure.
So every day we'd come back. And he would come, you know, he'd come 3 days, 4 days a week. And he's never done any strength conditioning before this. I'm not going to say he's done no strength conditioning. He just hasn't had it structured. Right. So, yeah, he's been one guy. And then another guy that's fighting this weekend, Chase Sherman, who's been here consistently putting in the work. But he's a guy that's very intuitive. Like, he loves to know what's going on. And that's where you find out who that person is. Like, personality wise, he's acetylcholine dominant. He's like very conscientious of what he wants to do and how he wants to do it and why he's doing it. And you have those types of individuals. Then you have those very A-type dominant people that are just like, I don't care. Just tell me what I got to do and I'm just going to go do it.
Then where does Yoan a champion fall into that mix, you know? Because we're allowed to have our favorite fighters. Luke won't stop talking about City Kickboxers.
I do like City Kickboxers.
All right? Tell me about the dog that's inside Yoan.
Jay is like, is a different animal. Like, I first trained her on a Sunday afternoon. It was the first time that she started at Top Team. And she called me up and she was like, Coach, I wanna train. Can you do Sunday? I'm like, absolutely. She's like one of my favorite fighters. But I was like, absolutely. When she walked in the gym, I'm like, I gotta train you. Because I knew she had that dog in her. Like, I saw it. And the first time I had her run the Prowler, you know, it was like an initiation phase.
Can you describe what this Prowler is?
The Prowler is the sled, right?
Yeah, it's a sled, it's a push sled, you know. It even has a warning on there that you could catch Prowler flu, which basically means you might throw up, you know, uncontrollably. And so I was like, all right, let's do that. You know, primarily it was more so just for muscular endurance work and everything else to break it down. But for the most part, I want to see where she was at mentally, you know, and mentally in that way, where she couldn't take advantage, she couldn't control the tempo, she couldn't, you know, she couldn't pace herself. And that's another reason why they don't like it, because I control the tempo, I control the pace.
Right.
So now it's going to hurt no matter what. And they're not really that great at that in a lot of ways. And nobody really is.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to get through it, you know? And maybe sometimes it's not about getting through it. Maybe it's sometimes it is about just testing yourself.
Sure.
Right? Creating that mental fortitude.
So you talk about like personality in when people show up and what they say and what they prefer. But like, I've detected your personality from afar. I mean, I've known you for some time, but even then I could tell that you were a little bit different. So let me give you an example. Like, your methods are what I would call a mix between old school wisdom and new school, progressive ideas. It's this interesting mix between them. And I think you get that way because you're constantly investing in yourself, investing in your knowledge, investing in your, like, what do I need to know? So when you were coaching, when did you realize, okay, here's what I know is true, and also, shit, I need to know more? And what did you do to solve that problem?
I would reach out to as many people that I respected as possible. I would look for mentors. You know, I would reach out to Louis. I would reach out to Joe DeFranco. I would reach out to anybody that I knew that was doing it on a high level. And then I would also heavy into the books, be all into, you know, super training, you know, science of practice and strength training. Those were like my Bibles in a sense, right? My fitness and strength conditioning Bibles. And so I would always do that. And then I have a long drive. Remember that. So I used that drive. And I took advantage of that drive. So I call it like, it's 95, I-95, it's 95 university. You know. So it was 4 years of that, 2-3 hours
shit
a day.
Shit adds up.
Adds up.
They don't use turn signals at that college at all. I'll tell you how much,
yo. Not over there. No, we're running past things. Yeah, that's definitely. So yeah, I would just spend time listening to podcasts, audiobooks, everything that I knew I needed to learn.
I saw you at seminars a bunch too, right?
Yeah. No, as far as me going to them, absolutely. Yeah, like seminars, workshops, anything I could get my hands on, And going there was really good because I could network too as well. So, you know, FRC and, you know, even with the CPPS and everything else and CFSC with Mike Boyle stuff. And I would find similarities, but I would also find differences. And I would pick the things that I knew that were going to work for me and my circumstances. I just rode with it.
You know, it's weird though. I bring us all up to say, like, you came up at a time when, like, strength and conditioning, we talk about MMA being the dark ages in 05 and 06, but dude, strength and conditioning was even fucking worse. I'll never forget, dude, this is a true story. This is why I ask you about it. I remember I one time went to go interview Brandon Vera. This is before he went to Alliance. He was with Lloyd Irvin at the time in Camp Springs, Maryland, just outside DC. So I was like, bet, let's go over there. And I show up, and he was very friendly. He was doing like 2 or 3 days, so this was the evening session. This was right before the fight with Tim Sylvia. And I remember they were like, oh, you should have seen the strength conditioning class this morning. And I'm like, oh yeah, what was it like? They had video of it. It was just Brandon Vera barfing in between, like, they'd be like exhaustion barfing. And they'd be like, okay, 25 more laps. I'd be like, what the fuck is this? Right? We have come a long way from that, it feels like. And it feels like on the MMA side, for me, you were one of the first ones who was like trying to be scientific with it.
Well, he's still got the sled flu, so he's got the old
school
touch.
There's always going to be a place for that in when you push yourself to the limit, but they would seek that out, right? Yeah. Rhabdo the Clown and CrossFit, all that shit.
Well, here's the thing, and let me just say this: like, I would never really do that unless it was for a specific reason, whether that be
fuck this guy,
right? Or like, I wanted to see, or I would test them. It's an assessment process. So how much sprint work can we do in an extended amount of time? How much can we recover from within a certain amount of time? Because now I can use field-based activities as opposed to going to, you know, a UFCPI, and they weren't even around at that time. Or like another lab testing where VO2 max and lactate threshold, I can give this a go and actually have that as a baseline assessment and then reassess them afterwards. So I would push them right into the edge, and then I pull them back, right? And then I remember this was when I was fighting too. It's like 5 by 5 minute rounds, circuit training, do it 1 minute each, and go until you die. And that was like the main thing, and everybody did it, you know. And so I decided, okay, what are they not getting outside of the actual skills training? They're not getting maximal power output. They're not increasing their explosive power as a whole, because they're not giving the adequate amount of rest periods. And they're also not doing low intensity cardio. They may be doing road work, but they're pushing into lactic zones because they're competitive and they want to push themselves mentally. So then I'm like, all right, we got to go from a high low approach. So I got to ramp up their alactic system and I got to ramp up their aerobic system. And that way I can give these two systems here and bring them together when they do their skills training, which is primarily somewhere in that lactic zone.
He's an artist.
Yeah, dude, this is what I'm saying. Like, I've seen the development of all this. When did we cross paths? When did I hit you up? Because I remember I did a story on you for MMA Fighting.
I think that was it. And then I seen you in Dallas.
Yes.
And then that's when we talked.
Yes.
And that was when Dustin got the eye poke from
Eddie. Yeah, that was
that was
211, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was Stipe was on that card.
Joanna was on that card.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes. That was my first UFC event that I went to, actually.
Is that right? Well, the reason why I bring that up is because I did a story on Phil for MMA Fighting, because I was looking up coaches who were trying to do different things. And you were this is true. I'm not saying you were the first guy to do this, but you were the first guy that I saw making guys do Zercher squats for takedown defense.
Yeah.
And then I looked him up, and I'm like, I had seen he had done bodybuilding. He had fought MMA. He'd been a football player at a collegiate level. And
powerlifting.
And I had seen you powerlifting. I was like, so this dude probably knows a shit ton.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the journey just kept going from there.
Yeah, I mean, and then like I've always figured out what was the weakest issue, because I had so many to work with, you know? So like, you had like 60 plus fighters at the high level coming to you on a weekly basis. So then I knew what I needed to do. And then when there was a general issue that was going on where I was like, their mobility sucks, or their lack of coordination in certain movements are not good because they're so specific. So like, even running was an issue. Like, watching their gait was a problem. And a lot of jiu-jitsu guys that come from that jiu-jitsu background, like tight hips, you know, tight upper back, you know, sure. So or tight low back and kyphotic posture, and that'll affect your movement, right? So I wanted them to be better movers, because I knew if they were better movers, they could correlate that over in a skills perspective.
Dude, I remember distinctly. What year was this? 2010, something like that. Mm-hmm. Marcelo Garcia doing an interview being like, yeah, someone's like, what do you do for strength and conditioning? He goes, more jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, if it works for Marcelo, that must be great. And now I'm like, okay, maybe it did work for, I mean, Marcelo had a great career, but like, it's fucking insane that people kind of think that shit. It's crazy.
I mean, I had a conversation with Andre Durrell, and it was actually one of the most viral videos I have.
I've seen it. Yeah. We talked about the value of like why weightlifting for punching, or sorry, for a boxer.
Boxing in
we
general.
We called his comeback win.
We called his comeback win.
Yeah, yes. That was amazing, man. He looked fucking dope. I was so excited for him, man. He's a guy that really put in the work and then like is a student. He wanted to learn what was going on.
And he's grateful to be here too. Hasn't lost that.
Super
like,
grateful.
Like, this is another great opportunity.
Yeah, he called me like he was a fan. I was like, bro, I'm a fan. Like, what are we doing? Like, so I was more so just happy to help him in that way. So I wanted to make sure that he had all the tools necessary. So when he asked me that, yeah, this is Broward, bro.
Yeah.
there's someone yelling aggressively.
Yeah, there's a disturbance. It's getting aggressive.
You missed the guy, saying what's up to us in the window, by the way, just recently. Right. But they always say what's up. I just basically said, like, as far as strength training goes, right, to build strength, to build armor, right, you need to do that, and you need to build it from a general perspective that can enhance the specific skills that you already have attained over the years, especially at his level, right? He's been boxing for, I think he said like 20 years or something like that.
Stupid, yeah.
So I was like,
04 Olympian, yeah.
Yeah, bro, like you don't.
Jesus, 04?
04. He's 38 years old, what I'm saying? And then you talk about, okay, he's also boxing since he was a kid. So, I wanted to make sure that we were giving him the tools, right, from a physicality perspective. And then on top of that, what does that do from a mental perspective? It gives you confidence. Because now I'm more physically stronger. So then when I go on the mats or I go in the cage or I go in the ring, I know that I have the skills because I do that every day. And now I have the physical capabilities to withstand blows, right? Forces that have come upon me and the force that I can produce out.
All right, if you can give me when you're behind the scenes, you get invested. You're a teacher, you're a coach, all that. Has there been a high profile victory that you worked on that you're like, I know what was put in that camp. I was a part of it, yeah. And you retain that pride for your student. Is there one that stands out most?
Dustin Poirier winning the interim world title against Max Holloway.
You were there that night.
UFC 236.
Were you in Atlanta that night?
No, I wasn't. I was at home because I think we had another fighter fighting the weekend after, so I had to stay back. And I jumped up like I was there, and I think I woke up everybody in my household. Like, I lost my voice, everything, because I knew that this was something that was really something he wanted to do and wanted to achieve, and it was great.
That was a tough fight, too, man.
It was, man. And it was entertaining, but, I never really got uncomfortable watching him fight. And that's weird, because, as a coach, I'm always like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I know that they can do it, but you're not in there with them. This fight particularly, I was like, he's got it. He's like, he's got it. And, obviously other fights, bigger fights in that way, I was kind of like, damn, this is a tough one. But, I got all faith in my man. But at the end of the day, this one, I was like, he's got it for sure.
All right, Luke, when you look at him, we use that term a lot that you invented, UBL.
Yeah.
Upper bound limits. Looking at Phil Theroux in relation to us, we see, even though it's 10 years
younger, they look like different species.
Some of the upper bound limits, if I could get going on a 2013 Vitor plan, all right. But here's the point. When you look at his beard, though, that's also what you could be if you took a little bit more attention, you dyed it, you grew it out, you coiffed it. How much maintenance is involved in that? Because that's fantastic.
On the beard? I've always had a beard, man. I've always had it. I think, you have
to. It's gotten thicker over the years, though, yeah?
I understand I take care of it more. You condition it. Right.
Kimbo always said, you take care of your beard takes care of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I know what he was referring to. I do, yeah. I mean, I've heard people have done that.
He may have been a bodyguard on porn sites. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying.
That guy. Yeah, man. Shout out to Kimbo.
Well, while we can be impressed with Coach here.
Hold on. I do have one more on the serious angle, if I may.
I don't do serious.
Okay, never mind.
Go ahead.
If I may. I'm going to ask it this way. I'm not going to ask how much could strength and conditioning prevent injuries among MMA fighters? But what I will ask is, what role can it play? What role can it do? Because it seems like your guys, once they're in that program for a while, they just, well, in the fights, they're rough and tumble, but they seem to always be able to make it without too much issue.
I mean, it's reducing the risk of non-contact injuries. You can't, obviously, somebody you know, kicks a knee or something like that.
What can you do?
You can't do much. But when it comes to non-contact injuries, we want to negate that totally, right? Especially in camp when things get rougher, you know, intensities go up, reducing of calorie intake, you know, all those things come into play. We like to make sure that we get a full-on assessment in the beginning. I want to see bone mineral density. I want to see, you know, how low are they in body fat percentage at that particular time, like usually around 8 to 9 weeks. And that's when I'll go and take them to the lab and get a DEXA scan done, because that's pretty much the gold standard. And I'll measure all that out, and then we'll get dietary needs based upon that. If I had my full go, like if I had full control, that's what I would do.
Right.
And then from there, you know, it's figuring out what's their compensation patterns, where are they deficient at, where are their asymmetries. And you'll find that, you know, if somebody's just too much on one side of the body, or isn't really rotating appropriately, or, you know, has compensation patterns inside of a joint and doesn't have the capacity to do things, we want to gain more capacity, we want to gain more control, we want to build more base. And that's how you can reduce the risk of that non-contact injury.
Dr. Bam Bam could fix my liver in probably like 3 weeks, all right?
I need him to fix my shoulder and also the way I look. I need that.
Luke, good, you can't see a man this tatted up without talking about it. And this,
I
don't know a ton about the, you know, the history of it like you do, but that's impressing me.
He's paid some money for these. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I got more since we talked, man.
You got a guy you go to?
Yeah, he's actually in Pompano. Yeah, I went to high school. Actually, I played Little League football with him. Yeah, so he's done all my stuff, and we're still going. We're going all the way up. As you've seen, my guy Jake Boswick, I got to try to catch up to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a job you can. I mean,
it's a lifestyle.
Like, if someone asks him, "What do you do for a living?" Oh, I fight bare knuckle.
Right.
Yeah.
It works out, but you would never be like attorney. You know what I mean? No. Accountant.
Not at this point.
Sets up carnival rides on the weekends.
No, he's too big and strong for that. But he's very friendly too, by the way, I might add.
He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. Super charismatic.
Yeah. So you got into this whole bit where, like, you're coaching coaches. What does that mean?
Yeah, so the coaches, that the trainers that work with fighters or work with athletes or just general pop clients that want to learn some of the methods that I've been able to put together, I coach them. So now I put together a mentorship program, and I can coach any trainer from around the world. So we have over 5,000 coaches in the mentorship program, from anywhere from, like, you know, Italy to Australia to the US to Canada. And the great thing there is that not only am I able to help them, but I'm helping them help all the other athletes that they work with. So now I can spread out my methods. I can spread out the service that I've been able to give to the people that work with me directly, and I can do that in a wider range.
Are these coaches specific to combat sports, or they tend to be whatever?
Yeah, anything, really. If you love the methods, if you love the systems that I use, and the systems can be spread around any area. I still use condensed conjugate for my general pop clients because it is versatile. It's just a skeleton system. And then from there, you plug and paste, and I give them certain protocols and things of that nature. In training ideologies to a degree, I'm not a big ideology guy. I'm not a big guy. Like, I'm not a huge proponent of, like, living in one world. I do like to take things from every other person that I feel is appropriate, or, you know, different methods.
Josh Fabia included?
Definitely not. definitely not. I was about to say, who is that? That would have been better.
That Diego's old guy.
Nah, like, there's certain things that just doesn't make sense. But, you know, and when it comes down to it, it's like fundamental movement patterns, understanding fatigue management, you know, understanding communication, and then putting it all together in a systemized approach that can progress an athlete and also reduce the risk of non-contact injury. That's the main
principle. Strong right there.
Bro, that's it. I look at this equipment. I'm so fucking jealous of your equipment, man.
Man, we was going to train, man. What happened?
I flew to the wrong airport. That is what happened. That's a true thing. Watch this. Ready for this, BC? Tell me if I say anything wrong. So the back extension there, the Ghost Machine, here's why that one's special, because you've got the back tray on it, which means with the bands on the bottom, which means not only can you do barbell raises up the bottom for your posterior chain, but you can now attach bands to it as well. The one I have at home does not have that capability. This one allows you to go Pete Rubish super heavy on the back end.
Yes, that's heavy. Yeah. Pete Rubish heavy.
That's pretty nerd heavy right there.
There's your deadlift jack. I have the exact same.
What do we call band tension at an end range?
I don't know. I don't do bands very much.
So bands at an end range gives you accommodated resistance.
Accommodated resistance. That's it.
Phil, can I ask you a key question?
I want to get on that seal row before we go.
Okay, yeah.
I've never used the seal row.
What about the reverse hypers?
I have a reverse hyper.
Okay, good.
Can I ask you key questions about gym culture, but I want you to be dead honest with me, okay? Sure. lifting gloves, yay or nay?
No way.
Yes!
No way.
Fuck you! No fuck way. You!
I look like the president.
Eat shit! No eat shit! Eat shit!
Yeah, do you wear with the fingers
like
out?
The
do you do the fingers out with it?
I don't use that. I haven't used them since high school.
Oh, but, please, good.
You know, but if it's good enough for Ronnie Coleman.
Phil, listen.
And GSP, it's good enough for me.
Listen,
right?
Listen. I'm 43, okay? It looks like I've been hit by a bus and they threw lard on me. That's what I look like. I look terrible. But there was once upon a time I lived in the gym. These fuckers don't believe anything I say.
All right, back to my line of
questions. No, hold on, Phil. True or false?
I respect his knowledge.
No, you go into any...
It's very book heavy.
Dude, in the Marine Corps gym, this was definitely true. You walk into any gym filled with dudes like this,
just running
and you
trains.
Put on the gloves.
Just running trains. I've heard these stories, all right? Just, you know.
Damn.
I'm sorry about that.
They're going to throw you out the fucking window.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah. No, I had a SWAT officer try to put these things on, and I grabbed them like mid like pull down. I was like, get the fuck out.
They're condoms for your hands. All right, back to gym culture. What about people that have ways and means? They even have the hopes and dreams, yet they're still working out in their front yard. How like just homeless bullshit is that? You know.
As far as what though? What are they trying to?
They're doing like full.
He's taking a shot at me, but he's wrong.
You know, instead of like working out in his basement, Luke goes out in the front yard in Washington.
I did for a long time.
And just flaunts that.
It's gonna sound like I'm fully with him, but I'm not mad at that.
No, come on.
I'm not mad at that.
I've mostly
get it in where you can, man. Like
this was during the pandemic when the gyms were open, they were closed, they were open, they were closed. This was, you know, I don't know what was in Florida, but certainly most of the country was. So I just started investing in my home gym, and during COVID it was like, dude, it wasn't unusual, you know, depending, again, Florida didn't have the same kind of lockdowns, but you know, it was a while in DC where you couldn't even leave your fucking house or whatever, so I was just ordering shit and having it sent, and then I had enough. I was like, I got a little set here, you know.
Yeah, that's a little classy.
But now my shoulder's all jacked up, so I'm using kettlebells.
That's what you were telling me. We got some kettlebell stuff that we can do.
I'll show you how.
And finally, about gym culture, how do you make sense of or understand that I can walk into most gyms, fitness centers, see almost no old guys in there, but if I go in the men's restroom, there's just balls hanging
that's,
out.
That's where they
it's
go,
like
man.
A party. It's like
that's
balls bonanza. What's
you
up
you gotta
with
go
that,
in the sauna
bro?
First, because they're butt naked in the sauna primarily, right? Then maybe the steam room, right?
They're brushing teeth and shaving with just
dude, old men. Old men will literally put on socks and shoes before underwear.
That's very true.
They don't do
that's
that at Daru Strong. I
left the gym after that one. I was good. Yeah. I never went back on that one.
What's the number one benefit? I guess the number one benefit of owning your own gym is what? Like you can just work out whenever the fuck you want.
Yeah, you can. I mean, I use this as my lab. You
know, right. This isn't like to the public or anything.
No,
like
no, this is private. But yeah, even when I started the gym, I just got sick. I started at a real competitive powerlifting gym when I was fighting too as well. So I never really did the Gold's Gym, LA Fitness. I would go here and there, but I grew up in a powerlifting strongman environment as far
they
as
they call
my,
that a judgment full zone.
Yeah, only judgment zone.
Like you couldn't touch the radio unless you squatted over 400, 450 pounds and benched at least 300 pounds, right? You didn't touch the radio. And so with that, there was no gloves, by the way, either. like couldn't do that either. And so for me, I was like, I wanted to keep that environment going. And I said, well, if I have the means to do so, I'll just create my own environment and make sure that the culture is what I want it to be. And so that's what I do.
Fair enough. Do you feel like, in all seriousness, do you feel like, okay, it's kind of funny, right? Like when I look around, I'm like, who else is doing what Phil does? And of course, you're pretty unique, but there are other people trying to do certain kinds of things. Like he moved on, but for a while, Bo Sandoval was at UFC PI. But funnily enough, where did he come from? Football, right? To what extent is that some kind of influence in how you think about your facility, how to train, everything?
We still have high school football guys that come in here. I have some NFL, 15 NFL guys coming in this Wednesday. But yeah, it's because of the fact that football was our first understanding of how to do strength and conditioning from a sport perspective, right? That was the first sport that actually really adopted strength and conditioning. And then, you know, other sports came along, hockey and even like basketball and baseball. They didn't come till later, but football was that sport. So you have a lot of guys that it was one of those things where you wanted to get bigger, stronger, faster. So how do you get bigger, stronger, faster? Well, you do that in the weight room. Right. And you need to get bigger, stronger, faster for football because football is a very, you know, high impact sport. Right. And so for that, I think that that's why a lot of those guys kind of migrate over to other sports and they have the understanding of it because they have a background in basic biomechanics and physiology and so on and so forth.
All right, who's been like, you know, you just test him, you see him work out, and you're just like, this guy's a fucking freak.
The one that just left.
Boswick?
Jake Boswick has been with me for 7 years. And I would tell you right now, the kid puts in so much work and effort. And I have another one, there's two, and they go hand in hand. It's like they kind of, they compete all the time. It's him and Tyler Ray, who works out of Killcliff now, I don't call it Killcliff. But these two guys, they're not the biggest names, but they put in the most work, right? And then another guy that's outside of that, Timbaland.
Timbaland, boy, I've seen his transformation.
Man, I'm gonna
you
tell you.
You mean like Timbaland and Magoo?
Yes, he was from Virginia Beach, Timbaland. Walk me through that. You're going through your day and you get a phone call or however it happened.
So it's funny because Jake actually did pad work with him. So he's been doing pad work with Timbaland for like 5-6 years. And then one day, Tim, you know, told Jake, he's like, man, who's the trainer that you work with? I want to work with him. So Jake actually called me and goes, Tim wants to work with you. Come to the house. So I was like, cool. Went to the house. For the first year, I saw that he had no movement in his hips. He had very little movement in his upper back. So we had him on the floor doing mobility work and just basic biomechanics for the entire year. And so that he bought into that system. And then from there, we started to grow into, okay, now he's standing up. Now he's doing more dynamic movements. And he built a great base with David Alexander. One of the guys, I don't know if you guys know who that is. He's another great strength and conditioning coach, worked with LeBron and D Wade and all those guys down in Miami. Built a good base with him. And then for me, I just took it and just try to run with it as much as possible and started progressing him going further.
Now, I won't say names because you may have had to sign an NDA, but you got a celebrity clientele that's impressive, almost like, man, maybe that's the pivot. I mean, that could be a fun life for the rest of your life.
Could you live off of just training Timbaland alone?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what, Phil? Fuck you.
I want to give you the chance to answer this. What's that like? You know, it's one thing to train, Olympian, NFL, or mixed martial artist, or bare knuckle fighter. What's it like training?
Athletically ordinary.
Because these movie stars, they're yoked as shit. But you know, did they put in the work to get that? That's my question.
I mean, I know The Rock puts in crazy amount of work. I know Kevin Hart puts in a crazy amount of work. And I'm just saying that I don't train them. Don't say that I train them. But I know the guys that do, and I know, you know, them as individuals, they're the hardest workers in the room wherever they go, right? But Timbaland is the same person. He's the same way. I put him with some of my elite fighters. He trains with Jake sometimes. He trains with Tyler sometimes.
I've seen that, yeah.
You've seen it. And he may not be able to do most of the actual, you know, exercises or anything like that, but he'll still put in the effort, which is important. And I've noticed with the most elite people, they're that common theme of effort is solely there.
Right, he may be athletically ordinary, but in no other way is he ordinary.
What he's trying to say is that Marky Mark does so much shit before you even think about waking up each morning.
Yeah, it's not chicken and broccoli that got him those abs. Let's just be very, well, maybe it helped, but I'm sure, listen, all those guys in Hollywood, who's the guy who plays Thor? Like Hemsworth or whatever his first, my wife has a crush on that dude. And she was like, he lifts so many weights. And I'm like, he does.
Are you doing a gringo poppy bear right now? Is this what's going on?
No, my wife's from South America, but I was like, yes, he does lift weights. He also lifts SARMs and TRT and
out there. Yeah.
You know, I'm not hating on it. I'm just saying.
They do have anything and everything at their disposal.
I just try to explain to people, there's a certain kind of realistic perspective you have to have. Even if you work your ass off,
yeah.
There's a level that you're going to level out at, and it doesn't look like Thor.
Yeah, you have a genetic makeup at a genetic ceiling, per se, you know, that you have to hit. And that's what it is, but you can always push it to the actual ceiling of where that is.
So where's Phil DeRue headed, man?
Man,
since we talked the first time, you've been like a completely different person in certain ways.
I appreciate it. I'm trying to do it all, man, honestly. You know, I just want to put the people in the right place to do it. You know, I'm trying to build a solid team with everybody that I have here and then scale it, you know, not only for this gym, but for gyms to come. You know, I want to do a licensing where I'm licensing out the methods to all gyms in the world that, one, maybe the mentorees that I coach that have gyms, they can use those methods. And as we license that, then we can start to do more continuing education on that front, put together a university or a course that is a CEU for any nationally accredited certification. That's going to help my guys still stay relevant in their certifications. Then on top of that, you know, I want to build something with Tim. We got something big with Pushing Peaks, which is a program that we have out, but it's really more so about optimizing human performance from a whole. And I want to build that up into something spectacular, maybe do conferences down the line, and then also maybe a sports club. So there's a lot there. I can go on.
Just don't sell out if they're like, we want you to be the official gym of Power Slap. Be like.
So I'm gonna, I had a couple of
I'll just say this. This is just a personal thing for me. Phil, I just want to tell you this on camera. Listen, anyone who makes it from any walk of life, I have respect for, right? And I feel like you're not done, but I do feel like you've made something for yourself pretty special. I especially appreciate out of the blue-collar guys who don't have shit handed to them. And you didn't just do it with hard work. You did it with constant adult learning, making good decisions, betting on yourself, investing in yourself. You've never been short on that, and I've kind of watched it from afar, and I've been like, yeah, I don't think your success is in any way accidental, bro. It's not.
I appreciate that, really. Coming from you guys, I thank you so much, man, because it really is a constant like progression and grind to a degree. Like, I don't stop. It doesn't stop. And it's, I'm grateful and blessed to have the family that I have that understand that. You know, my wife is phenomenal. She knows that I'm up at 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night, still studying, still putting together, you know, plans and programs and formulating new processes so that we can grow and do things that I always saw myself doing, right? Traveling the world, helping people, and accomplishing many things to come, and then building something of that, right? Building, quote unquote, a legacy, but really it's just what I can pass down to the people that follow me.
Where does your vision for yourself come from? And when I say vision, I don't mean like that thing. I mean thinking of yourself as someone who is capable of doing things. Because honestly, man, like, that's not necessarily inherent. It's certainly not intuitive. A lot of people grow up thinking, why would I even bother? I can't be anything. And you had every reason to not think that, at least for a certain part of your life, but yet you never really seem to. You always seem to be like, oh, this will always go well.
Yeah, it's interesting you asked me that, because I thought about that last night, and I was like, literally last night, and I go, I've never had doubt in myself. Like, I've always been like strategic, where like, okay, be smart, like, it's gonna take time. And getting older, I'm a lot more patient in my approach, where I'm a little bit more strategy based. For the most part, when I was younger, it was like, just go after it, get it done. And in your 20s, you can kind of do that. When you get to your 30s, and we'll see in my 40s, and the great thing is I have people that are at that level in their 40s and 50s like yourself, that I can go to, see that? Yeah, I did that. That I can go to, ask for advice on, like, what did you feel at this particular time in your life? What did you feel at this particular time? And I'll never forget, so Tim is now like a mentor to me too as well. Not only that, he's a business partner. But for me, I asked him, I go, you know, he goes, he actually said, I love your, and the reason why he stuck with me is because he loves my grind, my effort, the stuff that I put in. He goes, man, he's like, just keep working. He's like, be strategic, be conscious of your thoughts, understand what you're doing, but know that you have to be patient. And his mentor told him, his mentor is a big name, I'm not gonna say the name, but he's a big name. Told him, you're not gonna make your real money, just be patient, because you're not gonna make your real money until you're 50. Because that's when everything comes together.
Peak earning years, yep.
That's what they say.
I mean, whatever that means, I just took it as just be patient and it's gonna come. And don't look at anybody else and try to dictate what you're doing or feel bad about what you're doing or where you're at because you look at somebody else at a higher level.
Yeah, run your own race, motherfucker.
Exactly, that was good, I like that. We should put that on a shirt. Yeah.
So do you see a world where you might just like not train MMA fighters anymore?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. I'm at that point now where like I have my guys, I don't wanna take on any new clients to that degree. I have my personal training clients, I have my online clients, I have my fighters, but I'm not interested right now unless it's something that really, it's like Dustin says, like, it gotta get me out of bed, you know, in that particular way, I always will help somebody, but I'm gonna give them to my coaches that I coach now. So now those young guys coming up, whether they be in the UFC, Bellator, ONE FC, whatever, if they come to the gym, I'm gonna say, go to K, go to Jack. These are my young kids that are actually coming up in the game. So I want them to get the experience. I want them to get what I got. So that's where I'm at right now. That's where I'm headed.
Well, Phil, I have, over the years, man, I will just tell you that like I have all, it's funny, right? Every time there's a new wrinkle, I'm like, huh, look at Phil, trying something new, doing this, like there's new little wrinkles every time. I have to learn to stop being, I guess I am, I'm no longer surprised, but you do find ways to grow and reinvent and self again, bet on yourself in ways that is just so not just unusual, but proof of concept. It all, mostly anyway, that seemed to work for you.
And I have to say this, because you gave me a spotlight when nobody did. You started me out in this world. I always say that. I always, you know, have gratitude towards you and what you've done for me. So I thank you once again for putting me out there and letting me do what I do.
Think nothing of it. It was funny. Do you know, you remember what you asked me when I called you on the phone?
Oh, no.
You go, why do you want to talk to me?
Yeah.
And we walked through it, and in the end, it came out just fine. But I remember you being like, why do you want to talk to me? And I was I think this might be interesting. Yeah.
Perfect, yeah. So, I think at that point, I was kind of like, what's going on here, you know? And I'm still very selfless. So I'm like, why are you talking to me? You're an MMA journalist to a degree, right? We're combat sport journalists now. You're
entertainers. We've evolved to entertainers.
100%. Like you've evolved tremendously. Yeah. And you're great in that hat.
Thank you.
I prefer the term pornographer.
There you go. Yeah, and I've always watched your breakdowns and everything. And you come at that in that way, the same way I come at physical preparation. So
angry?
That's where.
Yeah.
To a degree.
Less sad, perhaps. Less sad and depressed. Well, Phil, thank you for bringing us in here, man.
Thank you, man.
I guess if folks want to get in touch with you, and I actually don't know, who is the right person for Phil DeRue? Like, who would I send your way? Seems like you cast a pretty wide net.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, well, if you were to go to any of my social media accounts, you can get me there. DeRue Strong, at DeRue Strong. And then I have my accounts for the gym and education space. And then my website is DeRueStrong.com. My Twitter is at DeRue Strong. If you want to find out more like videos and stuff, it's Phil DeRue on YouTube. I get all that stuff on there. But if you want to contact me directly, you can contact my assistant, Maureen Shea. She's a two-time world champion boxer, so don't get slick at the mouth.
She trained the $1 million baby for the film.
True, she looks the part, man.
It was great meeting her. Luckily, I didn't tell her my review of the film. It just goes off a cliff, dude. I mean, I know it won a lot of awards. No one prepared me at all for that.
It gets sad. Yeah, it gets sad at the end. Spoiler.
Luckily, she did no writing on the film.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right, but at Maureen, it's Maureen at DeRueStrong.com.
There you go.
All he does is build champions.
Build champions. Built himself. Built a business. Built champions. And
imagine this artist could take an unfinished work like this, like this dad bod, and give him about 3 to 6 weeks.
I need to move to Florida and see what happens to my life. I honestly feel like I'd look completely different.
No, absolutely.
I would let you inject
with
me
the effort you put in. Absolutely, yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, Phil, I'm pretty pathetic these days, but I try.
I'd like to get a saggy nipple like most good champions these days.
Smoke weed. I hear that's what you got to do. You got to smoke weed. All right, there he is, Phil DeRue. That's Brian Campbell. I'm Luke Thomas. Morning Combat, Room Service Diaries.